The following Teisho by Shinge Roshi, Roko Sheri Shayet, was recorded at the Zen Center of Syracuse Hoenji in Syracuse, New York. These recordings are offered for free. We welcome your financial support. To contribute and for further information, please visit www.zencenterofsyracuse.org. Thank you.
Blue Cliff Record Case 47. Umong's Beyond the Six. Engo's Introduction. Heaven never speaks, yet the four seasons follow their courses. Earth does not talk, but all beings are born. Where the four seasons follow their courses, you can see the substance. Where all beings are born, you can find the action. Where can a Zen practitioner be seen? Stop your speech, your actions, your daily routine, and closing your throat and lips, say it. Main subject. A monk asked Umon, "What is the Dharmakaya?" Umon said, "Beyond the Six." Secho's verse. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Even the blue-eyed Indian monk couldn't count it up. Rashly, they say, he passed it on to Shinko, then rolled up his robe and journeyed back to India. India is vast. He is nowhere to be found there. Hey, since last night, he has been here on this very peak. You know, Teisho, giving Teisho is, I'll use the word like, okay, but in quotation marks, is like jazz. There's a melody called the case. We read the melody, we play the melody. And then what? No knowing, right? No knowing. Will we ever come back? If you really are paying attention, the melody is in all those seeming meanderings. And they come around again, but not in an obvious way. So this is the fun of Teisho. It's certainly not a matter of explanation. And the more we get involved in discursive words, the more we stray from closing your throat and lips, say it. Same is true in Doksan, by the way. So many times someone comes to some degree of understanding and then, not in the way of improvisation, but in the way of discursively ramming concepts all around it until it's dead. You ever kill an insight that way? So our first precept, do not kill. Do not kill this precious wisdom mind that is shining in spite of you. Okay, enough divergence. I'm going directly to Engo's introduction. Yes? Heaven never speaks, yet the four seasons follow their courses. This is from Confucius, the Analects. Heaven doesn't tell the four seasons what to do, right? There's no formula, Subhuti. Just naturally, the four seasons, right? Spring comes, grass grows by itself. Summer, hot, we sweat. Fall. Heaven doesn't say, okay, leaves turn orange. They just become a riot. No painter can possibly capture. And then what? Without any instruction. Leaves wither, trees become bare, snowflakes drift down. Not once do they consult the calendar. Is it okay for me to snow now? No. Oh, okay. Just directly everywhere. Everything. No mediation. Things follow their own courses. If we can just get this from our session mind, if we can just go out the door with this, things follow their own courses. Why meddle? Who said you're the one who gives instruction to the rest of the universe? It's an interesting thing, though, how much energy we expend in doing just that in our own lives. Heaven never speaks, yet the four seasons follow their courses. Earth does not talk, but all beings are born. So here we see things, no words about how to do it. Okay, you're going to be born now. Probably many women would like an instruction manual for giving birth. Although they've tried to make them up, they don't work. I'm here to tell you, no matter what you read about giving birth, forget about it. There are just no words for all these beings being born. Just naturally, forms arise, right? Here we all are. Who here was not born? Who here will not die? Naturally, forms arise, karmic continuity is always occurring. And so we can see in the first statement, heaven never speaks, yet the four seasons follow their courses. This is the essence. This is what Engo says. You can see the substance. You can see the unconditional, many, many words, the foundational, the unformulated principle. Words, words, words. But you can feel it, right? This potentiality. This koan is about a question. What is the Dharmakaya? Heaven never speaks, yet the four seasons follow their courses. So this is a direct reference. Engo, in his introduction, is giving us Dharmakaya, the origin. Before all beings are born. So in the second, earth does not talk, but all beings are born. Activity of all phenomena taking place, constantly in flux. Birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. Again, quite naturally. So taking form, returning to formlessness, Umon said, beyond the six. So here Umon is saying, beyond the six, Engo is giving us the accord or the parallel in his introduction with where all beings are born, you can find the action. Numberless beings are born, each coming into its own activity and disappearing. How many? Engo is pointing, right? How many? Where all beings are born, you can find the action. How many beings? I gave you all these hints. Come on. Come on, guys. What's the title of the koan? Beyond the six, right? Okay, infinite six. We got you together. Good. So then, Engo asks, where can a Zen practitioner be seen? Right? The substance, heaven never speaks, seasons follow their courses, phenomena, earth does not talk, all beings are born. Who is this Zen practitioner? Who is he talking about? Where can a Zen practitioner be seen? Substitute seen with the word caught. True person of Zen, right? True person. Where can he or she be seen, grasped, held, stuck, imprisoned, whatever you want to say? Where?
Nowhere.
Good answer. Okay, so he can be referring to Umon, right? But he's also referring to each one of you. Each of you in your Zazen. Where can you be stuck? You may think so. As soon as we say, my mind, we're stuck, right? But that itself beings are born and dying away, right? That's always fluctuating, always moving, always changing. There is no, what did we hear in the Diamond Sutra? Past mind, present mind, future mind. No matter how much you may sing the old blues song, Trouble in Mind, but that mind is already gone. Yes, you can sing it? No? Okay. So, where can you be seen when you are in accord with circumstances as they are? When in accord with circumstances, heaven, earth, substance, phenomena, when in accord, where can you be seen? In other words, how can you speak in terms of being separated from it, right? No, you're not. We say nothing lacking, nothing superfluous. One with, no one apart from to be seen. Substance, activity, one. So that's this line. And goes, where can a Zen practitioner be seen? When we don't have assumptions about the way things should be, when we're not stuck in those assumptions and projections that all circle around what? Me, mine, right? When nothing is taken for granted, which also circulates around that separated self, then. So you may want to know, how can I become such a practitioner, right? You may want to know, what is the formula? Please give it to me now. I will. I tell you this formula all the time. Sit down, shut up. Very easy, right? Well, the sitting down part, the continuing is not so easy, as you've all come to discover. The shutting up is really difficult. We become quiet, the room is quiet, and it seems as though what's going on in the mind gets louder and louder for a while. For a while. Now you see, here we are, third afternoon. This is when session starts. What we do here is all the hard work. What we do at Daibosatsu is bliss. We go from the third day to the fourth day, from the fourth day to the fifth day, and on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Beyond! This is what we all need to do. I see some looks of, really? Yeah. Let me out of here. Today's day three. Thank you very much. It's enough. We always have this self-limiting idea. That's enough. Okay. Right here. I'm out of here. Two people already left. They weren't running away. They made arrangements. But, you know, I have to wonder. We think we make arrangements. We think we have choices. So I told them, never again. Okay, your arrangements are done. This is really important. We have to be willing to commit to the whole deal. What is the whole deal? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. How many breaths do you have left? So what we do in session is we look within to see what gets in the way of this Zen practitioner who cannot be seen. We all have this. What gets in the way of being able to manifest it clearly and directly, purely, with nothing extra? Have some ideas? Yep, they get in the way. They sure do. So we look within and we see that all the accommodations we make toward our preferential mind are exactly what create, that was a plural subject, what create tyranny. All the accommodations that we make for our tight hold onto preferential mind create tyranny. This is a very sobering thought, isn't it? When we read Sōsan Zenji's On Believing in Mind, it starts out with nothing, no problem, right? No problem, the great way, you got it. Just don't have any choice. Drop your preferences, you're walking the great way. No problem. This is absolutely true. It's one thing to read it. It's another thing to see how difficult that is to do, moment after moment. What arises? What arises? What arises? All the accommodations that we make toward preferential mind enslave us, create tyranny for everyone else. This is the scary thing. It's one thing if it were just about me feeling bad, but when I'm doing this too, all beings get out of the way because here comes tyranny. See? It's really a sobering thing to look within and see this. It makes us want to change, right? This is the process that we call Zen practice. We really look within. We have such courage. We see and we vow. All right, I understand. What is getting in my way is getting in everyone's way. Because I am not separate. And so if I treat myself as separate, you know what happens. Okay, so he says, stop your speech, your actions, your daily routine. This is to look within and see what is going on. All these assumptions, all these accommodations made to preferential mind. This is your speech, your actions, your daily routine. You must stop. You don't even examine them. They're so natural, right? They just happen. Oh, it's not my fault that I like that better than that. It starts little things like that. Little things that gets bigger and bigger. And again, we don't question our assumptions. Before we know it, well, you know, the famous, the very well-known phrase, right? Creatures of habit. We become creatures of habit. And we think, well, that's okay, but it's not. Pernicious, pernicious habit. This is to take our vow seriously. To really look at this is to take our vow to liberate all beings from suffering seriously, can only start within. I can't say to you, oh, liberate all beings from suffering, okay? All right, sure. No, it has to start here. I can't say to you, be happy. Of course I am. Through all these words that I am giving you, I am saying, be happy. You have the key to unlock the door, right? You have shut the door. You have created the cell. You are enslaving yourselves. Who can unlock that cell but you? That's what I'm saying all the time. So another way is to say, Bobby McFerrin, don't worry. Be happy. Same, truly. This is what he saw, how he said it. Don't worry. Be grateful. When you really feel this gratitude welling up, as it does after 3 days of sitting, more and more, whatever you see reminds you. Nothing to worry. Heaven never speaks, yet the four seasons follow their courses. This is Dharmakaya itself. Earth does not talk, but all beings are born. The other day when I was walking along the creek, I came to that old tree trunk that's been there probably since this building was built. And it's a whole cosmos now. All manner of little creatures frolicking, green leaves, minute, tiny little tendrils, little insects, things that we can't see with the naked eye. So alive, this dead trunk. So a monk asked Umon, what is the Dharmakaya? There are many references in Buddhist texts to the three bodies of the Buddha. So I can tell you, I can give you definitions. I don't know that it would be very helpful. But anyway, maybe you would like to know Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya, these three bodies, Kaya. So Dharmakaya, this formless realm, unconditioned realm, the absolute or ground of being, the principle, fundamental reality, all these words, fingers pointing at the moon, right? They don't do much for us, do they? What is Dharmakaya? Sambhogakaya. Some of you have experienced what is commonly translated as bliss body. To experience realization. And for every moment to be completely radiating this awareness, fully realized in every interaction. In other words, not just a blissful moment or two on the cushion, a little more than that. Again, words. Pathetic, pointing. And Nirmanakaya, the form body, and usually it refers to Shakyamuni Buddha, taking this form out of compassion for all other forms, to give the teachings of the Dharma. Nirmanakaya, so revealed. And of course, just what is in front of us? Turning your head, looking around. Look at all these Nirmanakaya Buddhas. The ones you see and the ones you don't see. The ones you're sitting on. The ones you're breathing. Form. How amazing. Minutely subtle. But as I said, all these words are no help whatsoever. They just make you annoyed, right? You have to wake up to them yourself. Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya. It's just another way of saying, be who you truly are. Tore Enji. Everybody knows Tore Enji, right? Hakuin Zenji's Dharma Air. This is from the book Namu Daibo Sa, from the section of teachings by Nyogen Senzaki. And guess what it's called? Huh? Anybody? Yay! In 18th century Japan, there lived a Buddhist scholar by the name of Tore. Although he had studied all existing sutras, he had been unable to attain enlightenment. He knew all about the definitions of Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya. He had been unable to attain enlightenment because his mind persisted in aimless wandering about the universe. Sound familiar? Still the victim of dualistic ideas. Even a great scholar like Tore continued to cling to the world of desire, of form and of no form. While on a theoretical level he firmly believed that these aspects of the universe were nothing but mu. Right? That sounds familiar too. Oh yeah, mu, right? Everything is mu. Yeah. On a practical level, he was unable to enter deeply enough into Zazen, and so could not attune himself with Dharmakaya. That is, unite himself with the universe in its actual nothingness. One day, all of a sudden, he cast off his clinging ideas. This is what we've been talking about today, right? And yesterday, and every other day. Casting off all these grasping after this and that that we think will make us whole. And entered at last into the region of absoluteness. His mind became like a naked body. And for him, nirvana was visible and present, inviting all to come and see, just as the Buddha had said. Like the smashing of a glass basin or the demolishing of a house of jade, he was awakened and entered into the palace of nothingness. He found Buddha within him. He saw his original nature face to face. He heard the sound of one hand. Looking up at the sky and laughing loudly, he exclaimed, "Oh, how great is Dharmakaya! How great and immense that which exists forevermore!" And he wrote a poem, "Dharmakaya, Dharmakaya, I see you as a mountain leaning on the sky. I see you as a rapid, constantly running cascade. The teaching of Buddha is my own now." I am the master of this flowery spring. That's Dharmakaya from Tore Enji's poem of realization. One of the most favorite poets of Nyogen Senzaki was Jakushitsu. His verse, "Didn't I tell you it was there? You could have found it without any trouble at all. The south wind is warm. The sun shines peacefully. The birds warble their glad songs. Spring blossoms in every treetop." So, I invite you to write your own poem of Dharmakaya. Well, ask this question. Umon said, "Beyond the six." What does this mean? It's just like saying, what does Dharmakaya mean? Beyond the six. Mean? Beyond. Okay, we may say, oh, it's the six. Six, what's that referred to? Six senses, right? Oh yeah, got it. Okay. Got it? Beyond the six. Beyond anything that can be counted or logically understood or explained or contained. What cannot be contained, in fact, is another translation of beyond the six. So, of course, no rational statement can be of any help. It forces us, literally forces us to go beyond. But how is he doing it? What is he using to force us to go beyond logic? This is so interesting. What is he using? Numbers, right? Numbers. Beyond the six, beyond the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This rational system of numbers. Some of you have heard Eda Roshi's famous statement, "The real is not rational. The rational is not real." Yet, the rational, or the numbers, when seen from a radical perspective, turns out to be exactly what Umon's reply is, the real. Beyond the six, there's no separation between the real and the rational. If that didn't make sense, I'll give you something else. The Lankavatara Sutra. Things are not what they seem, nor are they otherwise. And if that didn't make sense, so we're thinking, the basic element of logical construction, numbers, right? Numbers. And yet beyond, it cannot be contained in numbers. And yet, okay, it can't be contained. What's the end of enumeration? Infinity. Okay, but what about each number? Each number is itself all that there is. Remember? Buddha said, all that there is without anything missing, that is Buddha nature. So each number itself, 1, 2, 3, mathematics itself, this great rational system, is the real, from, as I said, a radical standpoint. Usually we don't see it that way. So anyway, I was enjoying the science section of the New York Times the other day. My favorite day of the New York Times is Tuesday morning. And there was a review of a new book by a cosmologist from Sweden called Our Mathematical Universe. His name is Max Tegmark. This is titled, If It's Possible, It Happened. Zooming through a Stockholm intersection on his bicycle one morning, 18-year-old Max Tegmark never saw the truck that hit him. The blast of a horn, the screech of tires, and a sickening thud followed in quick succession, extinguishing a young life filled with promise. It never happened. As the adult Dr. Tegmark, now 46, relates in the opening pages of this provocative new book, Our Mathematical Universe, young Max swerved at the last instant and continued on to school and an academic career that eventually took him to the faculty of MIT and the top ranks of the world's cosmologists. But wait, that fatal accident did happen, Dr. Tegmark writes. Yes, he came through unscathed that day, but he was also killed. And he was severely injured, and slightly injured. He endured every possible outcome, happy and unhappy, that can befall a bicyclist who encounters a speeding truck. All of these happened, he argues, because everything that can happen does happen. In at least one of an infinite number of universes. Now I see some of you are thinking, this is a fairy tale, but wait. We didn't hear this in the Diamond Sutra because foolishly we took it out of what Subhuti was to say. But let me read this to you. We can't read the whole thing, so we, you know, best of hits. The Buddha asks, what do you think? Would there be many atoms in 3,000 galaxies of worlds? Okay. This is infinite number. The Tathagata declares that all these atoms are not really such. They are just called atoms. The Tathagata declares that a world is not really a world. It is just called a world. Subhuti, if a virtuous person ground an infinite number of galaxies to dust, would the resulting minute particles be many? Many indeed, world-honored one. And why? He asks. Because if such were really minute particles, Buddha would not have spoken of them as minute particles. See, Tegmark, he's not doing anything particularly challenging, right? As to this, Buddha has declared that they are not really such. Minute particles is just the name given to them. Also, world-honored one, when the Tathagata speaks of galaxies of worlds, these are not really worlds. For if reality could be attributed to a world, it would be a self-existent universe. And the Tathagata teaches that there is really no such thing. Universe is merely a figure of speech. Everything that can happen does happen in at least one of an infinite number of universes or galaxies. If you find this far-fetched, you are hardly alone. The idea of parallel universes in which events diverge from those in our own reality is usually the domain of science fiction. But Dr. Tegmark is a scientist, not a novelist. And he makes a powerful case, leading us step by logical step from well-established mainstream science into ever stranger territory. You can tell that this reviewer, Amir Alexander, has never read the Diamond Sutra. Each step along the way seems entirely reasonable, so that by the time we arrive at Dr. Tegmark's multiverse, in which all that can be is, we are left to wonder, can this be right? And if not, where did we go wrong? And he goes on a bit, things get stranger. Dr. Tegmark narrows his focus to the building blocks of matter, the elementary particles, minute particles, governed by the laws of quantum mechanics. The position of a particle at a given time is described by its wave function, but this provides only a probable distribution of locations, not an absolutely determined one. Keep that in your mind. The wave function never collapses, he says, and all its different values continue to exist side by side. What all this means is that the universe is constantly splitting into more and more realities, in each of which the particle is in one of its possible locations. Nor is this splitting limited to the microscopic scale of quantum physics. Since we are made of elementary particles, our actions, thoughts, and feelings ultimately depend on their position. And our world, too, is constantly splitting into all its possibilities. Dr. Tegmark's ultimate reality is one in which anything that is mathematically possible, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, anything that is mathematically possible actually exists. But there is nothing that is not mathematical. Our reality, in other words, is not just described by mathematics, it is mathematics. As someone who had a great deal of trouble with math all my life, I was so encouraged by that. Really, it just seems to flow so naturally from this koan. The verse, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's a very basic koan. How many stars are in the sky? Anybody?
1, 2, 3.
Great, you all pass.
May I ask a question?
Oh my God.
I'm aware of this theory of parallel universes.
Now you have to speak a little more loudly. I'll put my glasses on so I can read your lips. Just a minute.
Well, I'm aware of this theory of parallel universes, and I have struggled with it because what it says is, for example, you say to someone you want to go out to dinner with, let's go to dinner, and the other person says, let's go to the movies, that you have actually done both. So let's say we want to come here for a session, and we're thinking we want to do something else. Mm-hmm. So we've actually done both.
Right.
We've actually done, as the article said, this child was killed, and this child wasn't killed, and this child... Mm-hmm. It seems to take away the meaning in what we do. It mm-hmm. seems to say, well, you've done everything, not just in every lifetime, but in this life. And so I struggle with it as saying...
You might think, so what's the point, right? What's the point?
And this theory is beginning to have a lot of clout in the scientific community. And I'm saying, wait a minute, I don't like this.
It really doesn't care. Seriously. So you have to go beyond the six. It's good to be filled with consternation so that you can be propelled to do this, to really investigate this for yourself. What is the point? What is the essential point of your multiversed life? Very important. That which makes us feel ill at ease is, that's where the teaching is. That's where we have to really probe, investigate. Shaking us out of our complacency, our assumptions, our this means this and that means that. What is the meaning? Where is the meaning? What does it mean to say beyond the six can't be contained? Go beyond. And then Secho in his verse says, even the blue-eyed Indian monk couldn't count it up. This refers to Bodhidharma. Even Bodhidharma couldn't contain, couldn't find this point, he's saying. Beyond, 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 even Bodhidharma. And then he goes into a couple of more lines about Bodhidharma. Rashly, they say, he passed it on to Shinko. Shinko was another word for Ekka, the second ancestor, another name for Ekka. What did he pass on in this parallel universe in which he gave Dharma transmission to billions upon billions, right? What was it that could be passed on to Shinko? What is transmitted? What thing, what meaning is transmitted? What can you grasp? Couldn't count it up. So what did he pass on? Beyond. Then rolled up his robe and journeyed back to India. You may know the legend after Bodhidharma died and he was buried. And then someone said, I met Bodhidharma in the mountains on his way back to India, carrying just one sandal. And so the authorities heard about this, and they thought, we better check this out. So they went to his tomb, dug it up, and lo and behold, no Bodhidharma. Nothing remained except one sandal. Now, what is the meaning of this? What is the point of this? See, we're thrust into beyond. And then the next line, India is vast. India? What is India? A country, yes, but what is India? India is vast. Vast? He is nowhere to be found there. What multiverse can he be found in? Hey, since last night, do you remember? Since last night, he has been here on this very peak. We have been encountering this every second of our not only session, our parallel lives. So it's for us to realize for ourselves if it's possible. Already realized, right? You realized it. Everyone has realized it. An infinite number of galaxies ground up, one, two,